So what makes a story fall flat? What makes a TV show flop? Sometimes it's bad acting. Sometimes it's a really poorly written plot line. But here's the base of it. People didn't connect. Why didn't they connect with it? Because when bad acting ruins a show, we can tell it's not real, which is weird because we know it's not real. But when we can see it, I cannot suspend disbelief long enough to watch that. When bad writing ruins a show, something doesn't ring true with us. Maybe no matter how good the actor is who delivers the lines, we're like, yeah, your character would have done that. We can tell when something is disingenuous. Sometimes we can't even explain why, but we know that it's not right. We can tell when someone wouldn't really act or speak that way. So not only do we want a story instead of facts, but we want a story that we can connect with at a deeper level and something that actually rings true for us.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And once again, as much as we love spending time and talking to you, we'd like to share things around a little bit, and we'd like you to hear from some of the other awesome speakers and content producers that are part of the whole Unbound universe, which sounds a little bit bigger than it actually is. So ecosystem, group, I don't know exactly how you want to say that. But we have some really cool people, and you get to hear from one of the best. Victoria Schurter is going to be doing this presentation that you're about to hear next. Victoria is a phenomenal communicator. She's an absolutely excellent writer. She's just an all-around excellent person. If you have any experience with our high school programs and EQIP, Victoria has been the person that has put that together and runs it. But she's also authored a colossal amount of content for that that we're constantly getting compliments on. And in fact, I just came off a long speaking tour that we're doing a bunch of things. And almost every one of my sessions, I had somebody come up to me afterwards and say, my son or daughter's in EQIP, and it just changed my life, which means that they had a lot of exposure to the kind of content that Victoria creates. I'm going to share one thing here that I would never be able to share in front of Victoria, and so I'm going to do it here. And that is that Victoria was working, building some of our stuff as we got the company started years ago. And then at some point, we just had so much content that we decided we needed to hire some copyright attorneys to just make sure that we had everything legally set. And we had a particular thing that we had done, and the attorney came to us and they said, oh, you had obviously hired an attorney before. And we're like, no. And he's like, well, this thing that you did, generally, it's signed by a law firm. So which firm do we use? And I said, I didn't use a law firm. And he says, oh, so you have an attorney on staff. And I said, attorney on staff. He says, well, who did this? I said, Victoria did this. And she was in the meeting with me. And he says, oh, so you're the attorney. And Victoria's like, I'm not the attorney. He says, you went to law school? And Victoria's like, I didn't go to law school. There was complete and utter confusion on all sides, right? Like, we were all befuddled. I was like, what is going on? And finally, he's like, so you didn't go to law school. You're not an attorney, but you did this. And Victoria's like, yes. And he's like, I have never met anybody who was able to do this before who did not have specific training in the law to do this. Now, to be clear, this wasn't something that was illegal to do if you were not an attorney. This is something that was so complicated that people always hired law firms to do it. And I had asked, in my ignorance, I had asked Victoria to do it. And Victoria, in her ignorance, had said yes. And she did it. So the meeting ended, and I was like, I didn't know it was that difficult. She said, well, that's pretty hard. Yeah, it was. But she never told me that. She never said, this is extremely difficult. She just done it. And so that gives you some idea of the kind of caliber of person that you're going to be hearing from here shortly.
And in this particular session, Victoria talks about, I believe the title is The Stories That Stay. And one of Victoria's greatest passions, as Jonathan mentioned, she writes a lot of content for Unbound. And Victoria is a phenomenal writer and is very passionate about stories. And not only the written kind of stories, but also the stories of people and understanding people's stories and how impactful and meaningful those can be. And so this session in particular was just really meaningful for the students who were at this Ascend event, in that it was just showcasing how significant that people's stories can be and how much of a lasting impact they can have on their lives and the lives of those around them. So with all of that being said, we hope that you gain a lot of enjoyment out of this session from Victoria.
Have you guys ever played with a wiffle ball? So there's something really funny about those. I grew up with those because they give you those before they're willing to give you softballs and baseballs and stuff like that. If you are like me and you don't have any sports ability, I think they're hoping you don't like hurt yourself. But the funny thing was, I have, since the time I was little, found those to be incredibly frustrating. I hate wiffle balls, hate them with a passion. Because when you're a little kid, right, and you're trying desperately to learn how to hit that thing, and you line up, and you smack that thing for everything you've got, and you actually hit it, you want it to just knock out of the park, right? You want that thing to be a home run. And instead, what happens with the wiffle ball? And it goes, whoop! Why am I even here? Why am I even here? There's no substance to it, right? That's me. That's one of my soapboxes. But the other thing is that we, like, equally frustrating in today's world is that we toss around the word hope with about as much substance as we toss around a wiffle ball. We mean almost nothing with it. Jonathan mentioned in the opening session, we use that word as lightly as we use the word hope in our culture. What is hope, and why does it matter so much that we're spending an entire day here at Capstone talking about story and our stories and how those fit into God's story? And while we're on the questions train, because we do a lot of questions here in Unbound, why do we spend an entire day of that event talking about hope? Because the reason that hope exists and the reason that story matters are one and the same. So in this session, we're going to lean hard into that reason. And to do so, we're going to look at three different answers to the question, why does story matter? Why does story matter to us? And then we'll look at a final question. What does hope have to do with any of that? So let's jump in. Bold claim slash reason number one I'd like to present to you guys, possibly at risk of sounding a little too poetic. I propose that first and foremost, stories matter because story is written into the very fabric and design of life. And because life and our lives matter. That is a kind of bold claim, right? So let's break it down a little bit. Start at the foundation. What is a story? I'm going to suggest the following, perhaps incomplete because most definitions are, but hopefully a good place for us to start. A story is a series of lived or imagined moments that are meaningfully interconnected with a beginning, a middle, and a resolution. Beginning, middle, and resolution. There's a beginning, right? Something starts. Even if you're talking about, you know, Star Wars, Riley was laughing about their Star Wars, Star Trek in the 80s play. There's, like, the characters come in and the story begins. There's a whole history to that, right? That's come up before, and there's all of these things that have happened, and then the story starts. But there's still a point where the story starts. And then there's a middle, trying to find that as change, right? Usually with a crisis or a series of crises. And then there's a resolution, which I'm intentionally not defining as ending. Because what happens when you go to a theater and you watch a movie and it has a cliffhanger, what do? You walk out and you're like, wow, that was good. I wonder what the sequel's gonna be, right? There's something in us that knows, well, that wasn't the end, so there must be something else coming. Or, you know, talk about maybe a new agey director who's, you know, trying to make a statement with their movie, and you watch it and it doesn't have any kind of like meaningful or satisfying resolution. What happens? You leave and you're like, man, I'm not sure that was worth my money. I feel kind of gypped, right? There was no resolution to that makes us feel good. There's something grating on us. Sometimes we can't even exactly put our finger on it, but something doesn't feel quite right. So what if I said, Bob once king? That's an event. That is a fact, maybe, right? It's not a story. So when I say, Bob once king, most of us have one of two reactions to that. Some of us are like, okay, whatever. Anyway, can you please get on with the session? Because who cares, right? Who cares about an isolated fact, an isolated event like that? It doesn't have relevance to us. There's no reason for us to care. And the other response to Bob went skiing is, who is Bob? Why did Bob go skiing? Did Bob know how to ski before he went skiing? Was he trying to do a green square? Was he trying to do a black diamond, right? What happened to Bob? Which is really interesting, isn't it? Because either we don't care about the facts, we don't care about something like that, or we try to turn it into a story. The only reason that we care about random facts is if they either become part of a story or have meaning for us as part of our stories. I have a brother-in-law who's a chemistry major, and so when he speaks, it's kind of not in English. I've just learned to be like, yes, anyway. And you smile and nod, right? But obviously, he has to memorize a ton of stuff that I would not consider in any way
interesting. It's, you know, a bunch of facts and reactions. But to him, it's fascinating. It's not a story in and of itself, necessarily, but it has meaning for him because it connects to what he loves doing and to his life and story. So kind of an important foundation for us to begin with, right? What is story compared to just random or meaningless facts? So to return to that claim, stories are written to the very fabric and design of life. What do we mean? Well, if a story is indeed a series of meaningfully interconnected events with a beginning and a middle and a resolution, and if in fact Christianity is true and life has a design and life has an author, then what is life but essentially and fundamentally a story? Think about it. If life has no design, there is no story. End of story. Everything is just a series of incidental and accidental facts with no meaningful connection at all. There is no meaning. In the charming words of Dawkins that you've all heard a million times, the universe we observe has no design, no purpose, no evil. No evil. And no good. Can we look at the picture of Jonathan's kid from the opening night and say there's no good? Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. Good bedtime material right there. But if Christianity is true, then life does have a design. And it has an author who created it meaningfully and intentionally. And we are part of an immense and grand story with a capital S. Creation, fall, redemption, restoration. There was a beginning to us. There was a crisis. There's a middle of the story. There will be a resolution, which for the believer is a brand new beginning. And maybe that is why, as the human race, we cannot get away from the idea of story. So life matters, generally and broadly, because it has an author and because of our relationship to that author, created and creator. But to take that a level deeper, if a story is a series of meaningfully interconnected events with a beginning and a middle and a resolution, and if in fact Christianity is true and life has a design and an author, then what are our individual lives but essentially and fundamentally a story? You've heard from some of your earliest months in Ascend about the Imago Dei. We are created in the very image of God. And that means that every single person that we interact with is a life and a story that matters. There is pain we go through, and the pain doesn't negate the meaning in our stories. There are hard chapters that we go through, and that struggle doesn't negate the meaning and the purpose in our stories. Our lives and our stories matter because they have an author and because of our relationship to that author, created in his image, loved beyond his own life, given meaning that we don't have to create ourselves. So if, as we look at humanity, we see that story does inherently matter to us, let's return to our original question, why? Why does story matter to us? I suggest it is because we cannot escape the fact that we're literally living in one. Because our lives are in the context of the great story, capital S, and because our lives and our stories matter. Story matters to us because God is the author of life. Reason number two, second bold claim, why do stories matter? I propose as my second answer, because stories require truth to resonate with us, and truth matters. So what makes a story fall flat, right? What makes a TV show flop? Or this is a little outdated now, but what makes a radio program go off the air? Sometimes it's bad acting. Sometimes the people didn't have, you know, Riley on their team and they ran out of money. Sometimes it's a really poorly written plot line, but here's the base of it. People didn't connect. Why didn't they connect with it? Because when bad acting ruins a show, we can tell it's not real, which is weird because we know it's not real, but when we can see it, we're like, yeah, whatever, that's not real. I cannot suspend disbelief long enough to watch that. When bad writing ruins a show, something doesn't ring true with us. Maybe Not that writers don't have agendas, right? But maybe we're like, I cannot even see your show for the agenda that you are pushing right now. I cannot even see it. Maybe we see their inability to meaningfully connect events in a way that resonates or that would actually happen. Maybe no matter how good the actor is who delivers the lines, we're like, yeah, your character would have done that. Or that doesn't fit for that scene, or that doesn't fit for that scenario, or that environment, or that situation. We can tell when something is disingenuous. Sometimes we can't even explain why, but we know that it's not right. We can tell when someone wouldn't really act or speak that way. So not only do we want a story instead of facts, but we want a story that we can connect with at a deeper level and something that actually rings true for us. Now, caveat, you may already be thinking about stories, when we're talking about fiction stories, right? Nonfiction is kind of a different thing. When we're talking about fiction stories, we're talking about exploring other imaginary worlds, other perspectives, other experiences, and in that sense, experiencing something that is very not true, right? So, Victoria, what do you mean by saying stories require truth? Because in many of our favorite stories are entirely made up, they're not true, and it's great, and we love them. Yes, that is true. Jesus used parables. Jesus used stories that weren't true. But even so, even as we're in the middle of appreciating this untrue, unreal thing, there is still something deeper in it that has to resonate with us as true. We have to still make a connection that we'll deem authentic or we don't care, right? Even Jesus' parables, right? It all came down to a deeper principle, to something we're like, yeah, that's true. That's actually how it is. That's reality. We relate to characters because we see something of ourselves or of the human condition in them. No, we are not in Middle Earth fighting orcs or destroying a ring, but we still relate to the emotions, right? And to having to leave something familiar, into the loss, into the triumphs, into the struggle. No, we are not a teenager in a dystopian universe, at least, praise the Lord, not yet. But we still relate, right, to the wrestling with hard decisions and hard choices and values and choosing courage and dealing with grief, right? We relate to the struggle, right? Yeah, I don't live in that world, but man, I feel that. Yes. Even if it's set in the furthest reaches of a fantasy realm, there is something distinctly human in all of the best stories that we relate to, and that is why people keep coming back. It's really interesting, short little tangent here, that truth matters so much in story, because sometimes it's one of the easiest things for us to let go of in the stories that we tell others about ourselves, or that we tell ourselves about ourselves, or tell ourselves about others. So to draw a quick connection from yesterday, we talked about relationships and connection to today. Just don't forget that genuine relationships require genuine stories. And that starts with God, and then it goes to us, and then it goes to others too. So sometimes, right, even with God, sometimes we have a tough time being honest with him about our struggles or our doubts or our joys, what's really going on in our lives. Like, maybe if I don't actually tell him that, he'll accept me more. Sometimes we tell ourselves things about ourselves, right? It's really easy to tell ourselves stories that aren't true. On one end of the spectrum, there's a whole spectrum, right? Say on one end, we're like, we have kind of our proud, egotistical thing. Oh yeah, this is great, I could do that, blah, 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 whatever, right? We have fallen to that. On the other end, it's super easy to tell ourselves a lot of negative things that aren't true about ourselves. We're like, oh yeah, this is true, this, no, it's not. What does the actual author of our lives have to say about us and our stories? Sometimes it's easy for us to tell other people different stories about ourselves, right? We're like, if I position or present myself like this, then I will be more received, like well received. I'll be appreciated more, right? I'm a natural introvert, but as a teenager, I kind of made too drastic a shift over because I realized that like super extroverted friendly people had more friends. And so I'm like, well, I could do that, right? Then I had to learn, actually, that's not how God made me. It's totally okay for me to be who God made me to be. I don't have to make up a story about who I am or present myself as differently because I think people will like me more. It's easy for us to tell ourselves stories about other people, why they're doing that, what their motive is, what they're doing without actually knowing for sure. Super embarrassing confession. A few weeks ago, I was legit writing this session, and I got a text from somebody, and they were just, you know, asking about blah, 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 and it annoyed me so much because I was like, oh man, they don't trust me. They think this is probably frustrating. They probably had this whole thing. And partway through that embarrassing rabbit trail, I was like, oh my gosh. I was literally 10 minutes ago typing this out, and I just did it. I just made up a whole story in my head about what their motive was and what they were thinking and why it was annoying and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I have no idea. That's probably not it. I don't know that story, so I shouldn't make one up. I was duly chagrined. I was like, okay, God, I'm sorry. Genuine relationships require genuine stories, and that starts with honesty with the God who made us and with ourselves and with others. So to return to our original question, why do stories matter to us? I propose this because we cannot escape the fact that only truth forges a genuine story, and truth matters. Story matters to us because the God in whose image we are created has revealed himself as the God of truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and truth matters. And finally, our third answer, or perhaps bold claim, to why do stories matter to us? I propose that stories matter because every story gives a choice. And as people made in the image of God, our own choices matter in eternity. Every story gives us a choice. And so if we look at, there's charts and charts and charts, right, about this choice point, choice point, choice point. And something happens, right? And then often something that they didn't choose, something happens to them, and you make a choice, and how do you respond? Okay, and then something else happens, and we make another choice, and then we have to do that, right? Choice after choice after choice, and then usually there's like a big climax, right? A big choice point, and then resolution. And whether you're talking about a story out of the old Bob books that I learned to read from, did anyone else learn to read from these books, or was it just me? Okay, we got a handful. I appreciate that, I found my people. Or simply because it was recent, right? The recent film adaptation of Dune. There are still choice points. So dog sat on Matt, Matt is sad, Matt pets dog instead of Matt hits dog, right? Or Paul goes to new planet, Paul fights for his life instead of Paul gives up, Paul learns from the natives, Paul chooses a somewhat controversial future that we won't get into. The stories we remember are built on a series of choices that a character responds to situations with, even situations outside of their control, usually situations outside of their control. A character who doesn't grow and choose and change is a flat, static character who we don't connect with and we almost never remember. They had no choices. They had no change. And in the same way, we get choices. And our choices matter as people made in the image of God. I remember as a teenager, like, struggling with the fact when you realize, man, I'm going to do this thing, this, you know, make this right decision, and probably no one will even see it. No one's going to remember it. I might not even remember it. What impact does that actually have? It is appropriate as you're, you know, wrestling with that, right, as you grow up. And one of the things I have been realizing as I've gotten older is that, yeah, people may not remember. Maybe even I won't remember that I did that. No one else may even know. And that doesn't change the fact that my smallest act of defiance in the face of darkness still happened. Nothing can erase the fact that it happened. God saw that, and God does not forget. The greatest battle of the will, something maybe that a bunch of people saw, that happened. And nothing can erase that. So maybe just an encouragement. When we feel like the small choice points in our story aren't actually making an impact, aren't actually moving our character forward, aren't actually doing things, it happened. Nothing can erase that. And God does not forget.
Is your high school senior's final year feeling overwhelming? You want them prepared, but without all the extra pressure. That's where Explore by Unbound comes in. Explore gives students coaching, hands-on projects, and courses in life and study skills, plus Christian worldview training and optional dual credit. They'll graduate with confidence, resilience, and clarity about their next steps. Enrollment prices increase soon, so don't wait. Learn more at beunbound.us/explore.
So stories matter because every story gives us a choice. And our choices matter in eternity. But here's the linchpin, the turning point. One choice that matters as much or almost more than almost every other choice. And that's to wrap this back around. What does hope have to do with any of that?
so late. By rights, we shouldn't even be here.
Should we,
Like in the great stories, Mr. Furry. For ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because Anki, the end, be happy. Just look at the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened. But in the end, truly as it came, the shadow, even darkness, was a passion. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those are the stories that stayed with you. It meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. I think, Mr. Furbo, you do understand. I know now. Hope in those stories had lots of chances of coming back when they didn't. They kept going. Because they hunted on to something. What did we hear that man teasing? There's some good in this world, Mr. Furrow. And it's worth fighting.
The stories that stay with us are the ones where folks had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. And this is where the decision, or rather I would argue decisions, to hope become inextricably connected with the idea of story, with our story. Because it's really great if we have this kind of vague esoteric understanding of how hope kind of applies in the world at large or for other people, but that's not really helpful, right? What about our stories? Think for a moment about the world in which we find ourselves, our setting. We think a lot about hope in stories and connections to little kids. This is yours truly. About 6 or 7 years into my story, there is a really spunky kind of devious side that you may or may not have had the chance to interact with yet. But if you imagine like a small person with basically nothing else, that was pretty close. As a kid, I was profoundly horse crazy. It's a little more tempered now because I am an adult, but still am. I desperately wanted to be a jockey, which was great till I outgrew that at age 8. I wanted to grow up and write books, or live on the beach, or better still, write books while living on the beach with my big black horse so I could like ride up and down, right, in the waves, and yeah, good stuff. As long as it still in some ways involved my cousins, who we would just spend hours and hours climbing trees and getting lost and exploring the mountains in our native home of Northern California. What is hope in my story? What is hope in a world like this? Is it happiness? Is it me blowing out my birthday candles with a wish that this was the year that I would get a big black horse and it had to be a big black Arabian because at the time I was all into the black stallion? Or was it that I could spend all my hours writing or creating things or playing outside or planting flowers or playing with my cousins? When people ask, what is hope? This is often the kind of hope that comes to our minds first, right? I have nothing against Emily Dickinson, I love her poetry, but you know her poem about hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul. That's often what we think about, right? It's just kind of, it's light and it's beautiful and it's transient. And it's not tried. Because eventually you have to go from being 6 to being 12. And you firmly believe that, of course, God's not going to let your dad get deployed to Afghanistan because you prayed. So no duh, right? Clearly that's not going to happen because why would God do that? And until then you stand next to the runway and you watch the plane leave and you're like, huh, what? And then you hear that one of his friends got shot down and killed. Could have been my dad. And then you feel this weird, achy thing called loneliness for the first time, and hold his shirt and cry when you think no one else is looking and can't see. Because slowly or suddenly, sometimes by age 4 and sometimes by age 8 and sometimes later, we become aware that the Shire that we live in is also marred by the war in which we find ourselves. We become aware all of a sudden or gradually that hope doesn't just happen to us. And so when it's our world that starts hurting and our stories that start kind of hurting, right, and we start getting some scars, it's really easy for us to then say, oh, well, why me, right? By rights, we shouldn't even be here. At my very first capstone, which is longer ago than I care to admit, Dr. Myers asked a list of questions that's been ringing in my head ever since, the questions that we tend to ask as humans, right? Who am I? Why am I here? Does my life have meaning? Why do I hurt? There's a truth that sometimes we forget when things start getting hard. The world is still beautiful. There is still good, but now we also know that there is pain intermingled with the beauty. What is hope in our stories then? It's really easy. I did this, right? Kind of subconsciously thinking, oh, those sorts of things don't happen to people like us, right? To families like us, we're good people. That's what I thought. And then my mom got cancer, and I had to watch her grow weaker and weaker through chemo and surgeries, and I couldn't fix it. And then I got really bad OCD that I've had to wrestle with for years and years. And then one of my siblings got a debilitating lifelong illness that won't be fixed on this side of eternity. Because sometimes the war isn't far away. Sometimes it's in our backyard and we're the ones getting hit right with some of the shrapnel. So what then? What is hope in my story? Full of darkness and danger they were, and sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? I've asked that. Have you guys? What is hope in my story? Is it a desperate desire that there would just be no pain, that nothing bad would happen to me, that the good things in my life would not ever be touched with darkness? What if there isn't a perch in the soul for that thing with feathers? The hope that we had at the first was not tried, now it is. What is hope? What does hope have to do with any of this? It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered. Why does story matter, and what does hope have to do with any of that? We celebrated Easter just a few short weeks ago. And I remember it was just a few years ago that I was listening to a sermon or something, and somebody pointed out, as you read through John's gospel, how it describes the fact that when Mary Magdalene went to the tomb, it was still dark. Think about that for just a second, right? It was still dark. Physically, it was dark. Emotionally and mentally. What hope did she feel in that moment? She was going in the dark to the grave of her Savior. I'd be confused, afraid, grief-stricken. Other than the women who went with her, she's alone. And in God's providence, that is the setting for what's about to happen. And that's often where we find ourselves, too, right before the dawn, standing at that crossroads, our choice points of hope. And it's not an understatement to say that that is a big point at where the line is drawn, right? Part of the linchpin. And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile and you are still in your sins. If in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. If there is no greater story to our lives, then we are indeed of all men most to be pitied. Because what is hope? Where is hope? How could the end be happy? It can't. If there is no greater story, then the end cannot be happy. There is no good, there is no evil, there is nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. The passage goes on. I've wrestled with, do we actually believe that? Because if I do, it changes everything. It means that the pain and the hardship and the suffering that we go through isn't meaningless. It means that restoration is coming. It means that the sun is coming up no matter how long the night. It means the darkness loses. It means that hope resonates with us, perhaps first and foremost, because God himself is our hope. And it means, and I've wrestled with this, that how we feel has nothing to do with the reality of hope. It means that hope doesn't exist only if I feel like it. It means that hope exists outside of our emotions of joy or discouragement. We lost a little baby in December, and I didn't feel hopeful. And I wrestled with God, like, why? Why would you allow that? That's horrible. And by God's grace, because of the people who have poured into our lives and shared that hope with us, we were able to remember, you know what? This is horrible. And the sun is coming up. And Christ wins. And hope exists outside of what I'm feeling right now in this moment. It means that we get to choose whether or not we will align our thoughts and actions with the truth and reality of the hope that grounds our stories. It means that hope is not a wiffle ball. Hope is a bedrock that we can choose to build on even when we feel overwhelmed by the pain of this world, because how we feel does not change the reality of hope. It means that in the end, it's only a passing thing, this shadow. Not that it doesn't hurt, that is a passing thing. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. We know that a new day will come because a new day did come. And when the sun comes, it will shine out the clearer. We have hope in the present day and for the future both, knowing that God has promised to redeem and to make all things new, and that gives us hope and joy, and not always, but sometimes, often to some level, redemption in the present, right? Something worth kind of calling out for a second, without trying to be prescriptive, I think hope in our stories is almost always a process. Not like a single, oh great, I opened the door and I came out and I was hopeful. That was fantastic, right? I think it's more often a series of choices. Every choice is one to hope, right? But that's not instantaneous. We don't just choose to believe in the work of Christ and suddenly experience every feeling of hope and never feel discouragement ever again. And that's okay. I think hope is more often a wrestling and a struggling. It's a series of those choice points. Hope is a decision, and a hopeful life is a pattern of those decisions. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't, because they were holding on to something. What are we holding on to? What about the bedrock solid promises of the God of truth and the author of life? To expand, this might be the singular point in all of Tolkien's works that I disagree with Sam. But maybe the right question is actually, who is holding on to us? Working all things for our good and bringing ultimate redemption and renewal to everything. That means in our stories, we have a lot of chances of turning back, only we don't. It means there are good things that are worth fighting for. I've been presenting answers to these questions somewhat boldly, but now I'd like to switch that for a moment to ask you guys some questions. Why does story matter? And what does hope have to do with any of that? So, first situation. A little baby boy is born. For the moment, end of story. Does his story matter? Why does his story matter? Does it still matter if his life gets cut short? A family lives for years in a war-torn country, helping the community around them rebuild. Does their story matter? Does their story still matter if not the whole family makes it through? A young man falls in love with an officer's daughter and gets married. Does his story matter? Their stories still matter if their marriage doesn't last. An 8-year-old kid has a super dysfunctional and abusive family and grows up knowing what it feels like to have a family fall apart. Does their story matter? A soldier has to face really the darkness of hell for the first time when he storms the beaches of Normandy and helps liberate a concentration camp. Does his story matter? Does his story still matter if he dies in battle shortly thereafter? Another kid's parents divorce, leaving him struggling and alone. Does his story matter? Does it still matter if he becomes part of the system because of all that stuff? All of those little stories matter to me because the folk in those stories all had lots of choice points of giving up, only they didn't. And if hope had ever been set aside, or faith or life had been lost, or other choices had been made, I wouldn't be here. Because that baby that was born grew up to be the little boy that was really abused. But he didn't give up, choice point. And he grew up young and strong and handsome and went to a military academy and fell in love with an officer's gorgeous daughter and they got married. Choice point, choice point. But it was 1939. And he got shipped out to Normandy in 44, where he was the third wave on Omaha Beach in Normandy, France. He wouldn't really talk about the war after. He said Saving Private Ryan was the closest thing he ever saw to what it was like. And his unit was the liberation force for Dachau concentration camp. Weirdly, where Frenkel was in a sub camp of, so I have no idea if that ever overlapped. And he was the guy in charge of organizing all of the cleanup. Talk about a lot of choice points. He could have turned back at any point there. The sort of things that he saw were such that he wouldn't talk about it afterwards. But he didn't. Choice point. He returned home. And then he and his wife and family actually got stationed back in Germany for rebuilding during the war. Choice point, choice point. His daughter grows up, gets married, unfortunately marries an alcoholic, divorced when his youngest grandson was only 6. And that little guy faced a really rough childhood. But this boy had also grown up knowing what it felt like to not have a family, thought differently about that. So as a grown man, he'd have his little grandson come live with him for this year, come out, spend the summer, come on vacation with us here, and taught him about manhood and finances and family and caring for others. Choice point. And that little boy grew up knowing what it felt like to have a place where he belonged, and that faith was important, and that family mattered. And that little boy was my dad. What makes story matter? What makes a story matter? What does hope have to do with any of that? Would that man's story have mattered if he decided, hope doesn't really matter. Let's turn to substances. Let's turn to abuse. Let's turn to despair, whatever. Either my life would look really different than it does now, or I wouldn't be here. If he hadn't taken his grandson in, would my dad have then learned what it was like to value a family or to think that was even important? It's arguable that if my great-grandfather and people like him hadn't shown my dad the kind of love that they did, I wouldn't be here in Unbound. Wouldn't definitely be here at Capstone. Would I be a Christian? God can do anything, right? I hope so, but I don't know. Every story that we get to hear and that you will hear and every part of your story is touching the lives of others in ways that may not even be realized or seen in our lifetime. But your choices matter. The choice points for hope in your story matter. Your faithfulness and your resilience and your hope might be completely changing the world for somebody like me. My great-grandpa passed away when he was 6, that first picture, right? I hardly knew him and he hardly knew me, but his life gets to touch mine. A lot of you guys weren't even born when he passed away, but his life still gets to touch yours. So, just an encouragement, a reminder, I would beg you to not ever forget that even when we don't see the impact, our lives are doing the exact same thing. Story matters, and hope exists because the reason is one and the same. Ultimately, because of who God is, the author of life, who created us in his image with lives and stories that matter. Who is the God of truth, who has given us very great and precious promises, who gives us choices and gives us hope. going to wrap up here really quick with just a minute or two of story time. It's the written version of what you just saw. In this scene, two characters are struggling through a wilderness, battling discouragement and physical exhaustion after months of hardship. And the first character, "I don't like anything here at all," said Frodo. "Step or stone, breath or bone, earth, air, and water all seem cursed, but so our path is laid." "Yes, that's so," said Sam. "And we shouldn't be here at all if we'd known more about it before we started. But I suppose it's often that way. The brave things in the old tales and songs, Mr. Frodo, adventures, as I used to call them, I used to think that they were things the wonderful folk of the stories went out and looked for because they wanted them, because they were exciting and life was a bit dull, kind of a sport, you might say. But that's not the way of it with the tales that really mattered, or the ones that stay in the mind. Folk seem to have just been landed in them, usually. Their paths were laid that way, as you put it. But I expect they had lots of chances like us of turning back, only they didn't. And if they had, we shouldn't know, because they'd have been forgotten. We hear about those as just went on. And not all to a good end, mind you, at least not to what folk inside a story, not outside it, call a good end. You know, coming home and finding things all right, though not quite the same. But those aren't always the best tales to hear, though they may be the best tales to get landed in. I wonder what sort of a tale we've fallen into. "I wonder," said Frodo. "But I don't know. And that's the way of a real tale. Take anyone that you're fond of. You may know or guess what kind of a tale it is, happy ending or sad ending it, but the people don't know. And you don't want them to." "No, sir, of course not. In the old stories, they never thought they'd make it. And yet they did, and that was a worse place and a blacker danger than ours. But that's a long tale, of course, and goes on past the happiness and into grief and beyond it. And I never thought of that before. Why, to think of it, we're in the same tale still. It's still going on. Don't the great tales never end?" "No, they never end as tales," said Frodo. "But the people in them come and go when their part's ended. You and I, Sam, are still stuck in the worst places of the story, and it is all too likely that some will say at this point, 'Shut the book now, Dad, we don't want to read any more.'" "Maybe," said Sam. "But I wouldn't be the one to say that. Thank you."
Well, we are willing to bet that they had some stories from Victoria that will actually stick, that will stay with you. And so we hope you enjoyed Victoria, and we hope you enjoyed learning from her. And I hope you got as much out of it as we do every time we hear Victoria speak.
And if you enjoyed hearing this session and you are interested in what sort of other content that Victoria and the rest of the Unbound team has created, we have programs all the way from courses that just about anybody can sign up for, all the way up to a high school and post-high school programs. So if you'd like to learn more about any of those and check them out, visit our website, beunbound.us, and check out what we have to offer and see if there's something that is interesting for you or your student.
And until next time, be unbound.
Hi, I'm Destiny. When I think about the impact that this ascension year had on me, it's honestly kind of hard to put into words. Going through the foundation's year gave me something that I didn't realize I needed, which was what I call the three C's: clarity, confidence, and community. A huge community. I learned how to take ownership of my life, not just in the sense of productivity, but in how I approach challenges, relationships, and even my faith. Ascend taught me how to lead with purpose and to build something meaningful from the ground up. I worked on real-world projects, got mentored by people I really respect, and made a great group of friends that actually get what it's like to want more out of life than just the typical path. Now I'm about to start my second year of Ascend, and I plan to finish all 3 years. I also have a lot of goals I want to achieve, so I'm in the midst of figuring all that out step by step. Some common questions people would ask me about my experience is, what made you join Ascend initially? Honestly, I was feeling pretty uncertain about college and what I wanted to do next. I was searching for more purpose and clarity, not just a checklist of classes and assignments, but a real sense of direction for my life. And when my dad showed me Ascend, because he's the one who introduced me it really seemed like a chance to explore that in a supportive, faith-centered community. Next question is actually a question I was only asked once, but I really liked the question. It was, what did you struggle with before you enrolled in Ascend? Before Ascend, I actually really struggled in confidence, especially around figuring out what path to take and how to actually believe in myself. I also felt kind of alone in that struggle, like I was the only one not sure about the future. Ascend helped me see that I'm not the only one and that it's okay to not have everything figured out, and gave me the tools and the community to work through it. Another question that I was asked a few times is, how do I feel different now? I feel so much more confident and focused than I did before. I have a clear sense of my purpose and how my faith plays into that. I've grown as a leader and learned how to take intentional steps forward, even when the path isn't totally clear yet. So if you're wondering if Ascend is worth it, it doesn't just prepare you for a career, it prepares you for life. Thank you for listening.